This is Theory of Change. I'm Matthew Sheffield.
Thanks for joining me today. We're going to be talking about the role of misogyny in the Republican Party and the conservative movement. And the person who I brought on to talk to me is Robin Vinakiam. And Robin is a writer at the website Wonkette. And she is right here, is her Twitter information right here, Robin Elise. It's Robynelyse. And she has been there since 2016. And Robin has been looking at online misogyny for quite some time. And I figured she would be one of the best people I could talk to about all this. She used to write a column for Wonkette that was called The Week in Garbage Men. And that I love the term on that because certainly there are a lot of garbage right-wing men on the internet. But Robin, you had been covering that subject for a lot longer than your time at Wonkette, I understand, since about 2012.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in this subject?
You know, I'm actually not sure where I first came upon the PUA hate site. It was a long time ago. I think mostly like a bunch of feminists at the time, like feminist bloggers, had found a lot of these sites that were just directed towards straight up misogyny. And one of them was PUA hate, which is, you know, where all of the incel stuff first started for the most part. I mean, there were non-misogynistic incels at that point. But this, like, that whole aesthetic, I guess, really like gestated and was born at PUAhate.com, which no longer exists, and was taken offline after a member of that group, Elliot Roger, went and murdered a bunch of people in 2014.
Yeah, and I mean, and that was, he really kind of inspired a lot of these people afterward. Like they refer to him as a Saint Elliot.
Yes.
And make memes glorifying him just as if he was a Christian saint or whatever. I mean, it's really disturbing. And a lot of people, even now, I feel like are not aware that this stuff exists. Would you say that?
I mean, it was a huge, huge, huge thing for a while, to the point where like it's been a storyline on several different television shows. Most recently, Evil, the show where they're like, you know, exorcising demons and whatnot, had a whole incel storyline last season where, not spoiler alert, this guy who is evil and like a demon of some kind, and also the guy from Lost, I don't really understand what his deal is, but he convinced this one guy to go and join an incel group and try and murder a bunch of people, but it didn't work out. So,
hummus.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and but at the same time, though, I think while people may be aware that it exists more than before, I found that there's kind of a similar thought pattern about the religious right, the Christian right in general, also that people are like, yeah, they're out there, but you know, they're just not relevant to anything. No one cares what they do. They're just dumb. Like everyone knows they're dumb. Is that something you've encountered from people?
To some degree, although I do think that, you know, the amount of people that they've actually murdered has resulted in people taking them pretty seriously.
As somebody who writes about the Christian far right a lot when tweets about it, a lot of times I will encounter, and this is especially true from like centrist media outlets, they'll be like, no one cares about what these people say. They're irrelevant. And like, they're just a joke. And like, why write about them? Has anybody said something like that?
Well, I think everyone very few people are trying to justify them, unless they're Jordan Peterson, who was a very big fan of justifying them. But they have had an influence, I would say, on the larger right-wing anti-feminist bent, more so than probably any other, you know, group thing other than Christianity. So they have like a lot of the same anger towards the sexual revolution, a lot of the same anger towards, you know, women being able to do whatever they want. And a lot of the, you know, there's been a lot of mingling, I would say, even if everyone says, oh, these guys are losers, who cares about them?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, that's, no, you're right. That's exactly how they fit in. And there's an interesting book out there that I would recommend people if you're interested in how sort of a lot of this stuff correlates. It's called The Long Southern Strategy, and it's by Angie Maxwell and Todd Shields. They're professors at the University of Arkansas. And it kind of shows how misogyny is really interconnected with a lot of other things that you wouldn't necessarily think. So, such as racism or such as Christian supremacy. And what, if you look at right-wing politics over time, because it started mostly in the 1940s, 1950s in the United States as a formal conservative movement, quote unquote. And in the beginning, a lot of the popularity that they had was racially based, so opposition to segregation. That was how the religious right originally got engaged in politics, because the government was closing down the segregation academies that they had created after Brown versus Board of Education, or was going to tax them. And that got them interested in supporting Ronald Reagan. And then after that, kind of the Christian supremacism is very strong for a lot of, you know, boomer and older people. And then among younger people, let's say young Gen X and younger, anti-feminism seems a very strong component in what they do. Like, they hate feminists. Like, they're obsessed with you guys. Are they not?
Somewhat, yeah. Well, I think what they're really upset about is that, you know, feminism generally won. Like, they're outside of like trad wives and like very specific you know, genre groups, generally speaking, like women work, you know, women have no problems speaking their mind, and most of all, women are not just like getting married to the first dude who comes along and, you know, staying with him forever because she has no other choice, which frankly, you know, considering Betty Broderick and whatnot, you would think would be good for them, but.
Yeah, well, why don't you explain who that reference there for those who don't know it.
Sorry, Betty Broderick was a housewife in the 1980s who killed her husband after he left her, but she had put him through college, she had supported him the whole time, and when he left her, she had nothing and wasn't able to, you know, function or, you know, earn a living or really do anything because she had just been a housewife for so long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she had never been able to, you know, achieve her dreams. Mm-hmm. And as a result, when they got divorced, she was screwed. And this had happened to a lot of other women. But a lot of these men really like this idea of women being trapped in this way because they don't, you know, they're angry about no fault divorce. They're angry about, you know, a lot of these things that permit women to leave. They're mad at things that permit women to, you know, wait a long time before getting married and having kids, anything like that, because they have just, you know, these ideas of how things would be better for them if that were the case.
Yeah. Well, and so a lot of that kind of intersects with, of course, the Christian rights view of how women should be, that their place is in the home and, you know, and you should obey your husband. And so, and what's been kind of interesting though, is that, so you do have this sort of intersection of cultures where people who, you know, may not necessarily be religious, but they are anti-feminist and they're, or they, you know, are anti-Muslim And so you're seeing an influx kind of into Republican politics of non-white Christians in recent years. So like, for instance, Donald Trump in 2020 improved his voting performance among Hispanics, among African-Americans, and among white women compared to 2016. And actually why he lost was that he had actually lost quite a bit of white men in his vote. Because they were like, holy shit, this dude is crazy. Like my friends had told me that he was crazy. Maybe they were right. And it was educated white men who basically left. And that's why he ended up losing. We had an incident recently with one of these new conservatives who has come in. Her name is, she's a porn actress, and her name is Brandy Love. There's a picture of her on the screen there. She's got her Trump shirt and doing a selfie for everybody. And she is very famous in the industry. I would say, you know, she's kind of like the Jason Kidd of porn, if you will. Very well known. And she tried to go to the a convention run by the Turning Point USA group, which is this group that basically functions as a propaganda organization for young people, and to try to propagandize them with basically Christian nationalist Republican talking points and brainwash them. And it's an interesting group because, unfortunately for them, and people, they don't get a lot of attention from the mass media, but one thing they did become known for was they had some college students wear diapers and baby clothes to protest what they said was childish censorship on the part of liberals, because liberals couldn't handle disagreement. And so they were just like babies, according to Turning Point. And of course, needless to say, everybody thought that was absolutely hilarious, that they were going to own the libs by dressing in diapers. And they became national news after that. But more recently, though, they have kind of been under attack by this alt-right Christian supremacist group who collectively refer to themselves as Groypers. Can you talk a little bit about that group and what they've been trying to do to Turning Point, Robin?
Okay, so they have mostly coalesced around this white nationalist Nick Fuentes. Like, they are all fans of his, and there's been a lot of drama between Turning Point and the Groypers going back to probably about 2017, like a few years actually. This one member of Turning Point was photographed hanging out with Fuentes and a bunch of the other, you know, white nationalists. But in trouble, Right Wing Watch showed Charlie Kirk the pictures of them hanging out, and he denounced white nationalists, and, you know, she got severed from the organization and everything. So they've basically been like bickering since then, and they didn't get along too well before then either, but that's been like the main issue like that started everything. And ever since then, the Groypers have been going and, you know, to various TPUSA events and trying to cause trouble. At this particular event, now, Nick Fuentes has been banned from the TPUSA convention for years, but several of his followers went. And one of the ones who went actually saw Brandy Love and started, you know, putting it out on Telegram. Oh, they won't let Nick Fuentes into the TPUSA, but they'll let this porn star in.
Yeah.
And so there was a whole bunch of drama. She gets kicked out by email. She ends up posting about it online. And all of these conservative people are like, no, we don't like porn stars. We don't like what you do. That's actually not okay with us at all. As it turns out, we are really sex negative, except oddly for Ben Domenech. I think that's how you pronounce his last name, but Meghan McCain's feller. He came out in defense of her, saying that the GOP should be a big tent party, but she's also written for the Federalist. So,
Yeah, well, and it's important also to note here that So I'm going to just put on the screen. This is a picture that Brandy Love took when she was had arrived there at the convention of the Turning Point. This is a student action summit, as they called it. So it's geared toward high school and college students. And she obviously was dressed appropriately. Mm-hmm. And she was an attendee. She's got her regular, you know, she paid for a VIP backstage pass, or like granted access to some rooms, but she wasn't a speaker. She was just literally showing up there to watch these awful people speak. and like that was too much for Turning Point, because and I think, you know, the something that people don't realize about this feud and is that, you know, Fuentes, his a huge part of his mojo is basically taking the Christian nationalist stuff and turning it up to not just 11, like 15, and being like, well, look, you say that you're a Christian conservative. Well, what have you conserved? Look at all these women out here who have jobs. Look at all these porn stars who are, you know, at our conservative events. Look at all these things here. And by the way, you know, the Bible says that there's nothing wrong with racism. So, you know, and of course he's right. You know, the Bible says slavery is okay, and that slaves need to obey their masters. As a matter of fact, in that in Romans 13, it literally says it's a sin to oppose the government leaders. But apparently that doesn't apply to Joe Biden.
No, it literally only applies to Republicans. That is the law.
Yeah. Well, and so basically they have been, you know, going out there to these events and being like, so you say you're a Christian. Well, then how come you support, you know, same-sex marriage? Or they'll say that to various people. And like, they have no answer. Like, how can you reply to that in an authentic way? Because if you're basing your entire political ideology on, I know what is in the Bible is true, I have the objective truth on my side because I advocate for Christian fundamentalism, then if somebody's just more extreme and more fundamentalist, how can you address that? I don't think you can, other than censoring them.
Yeah, no, there really isn't, you know, any kind of option there. And so they've basically just kicked him out of all of their events. Because the thing is, for the most part, they actually agree with him, I think, on most things. Generally speaking, the right usually agrees with the far right. They just don't want to look too bad. Like, they don't want to be explicitly white nationalist, which is where he catches them a lot. Like, he accuses TPUSA, even Donald Trump Jr., of being insufficiently pro-white, and has no problem saying that. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, the others try and sort of cover it up a little bit.
Yeah, well, and then the other thing is that he does play on their, you know, continual, you know, they brand themselves as, oh, we're against cancel culture, we're against censorship. Well, if that's true, you got to let this dude into your convention then, because are don't all voices have to be heard in this marketplace of ideas? And they have nothing to say to them. Like, these people,
conservatives don't ever get in trouble for hypocrisy. Like, they don't.
Yeah, well,
cancel culture or whatever you want to call it, trying to ban people and various things since the dawn of their entire ethos. And, you know, it's different because, you know, as long as you're not banning people for reasons that they don't like.
Yeah,
that's fine. And they don't, in general, they don't get in trouble for any kind of hypocrisy from their people.
Now, but what about in the mainstream press? I would say that that's even true there too. Like, when have you seen Republicans asked about, you know, well, like this Brandy Love thing? I mean, it was all over Twitter this week and the weekend, but there weren't any stories in the mainstream media about it. Like, this is a significant story as it relates to the Republican, you know, Christian nationalist movement. And they didn't even talk about it. I mean, why wouldn't you talk about a story about porn stars and you know, right-wing bigots? Like, that's an awesome story.
Like, they don't want to embarrass people. It's like there's like a it's like there's like, you know, there's only so far you can go to their faces about things. You can't actually, you know, for some reason, I don't know why, I would probably ask harder questions, but you can't directly say like, so what's the problem with porn stars? Why do you guys hate porn stars? Because they don't really want to answer that question. They don't want to touch it. So they're not, you're not going to get an interview with them, I guess, if you ask them about.
Yeah, no, I think you've hit on, that's what it is, because so much of mainstream journalism is about access. They don't do research anymore, like investigative research. Almost everything that they get is just handed to them by somebody else. And the problem is, of course, if you're depending on people handing you stuff, well, then you kind of can't piss them off.
Yeah.
And you have to coddle them. I mean, it's like, you look at all these people like Charlie Kirk, the president of Turning Point TPUSA. You know, this guy never does debates with anyone. Ben Shapiro never does debates with progressive pundits. And like Steven Crowder, who is this right-wing YouTuber, he literally got scared of debating another a left-wing YouTuber named Sam Cedar. Like he literally cut off the stream when he was recently, when he was somebody else brought him in to debate with him. Like these people are cowards and they have no arguments. And then at the same time, they're going off and saying that liberals are cowards and have to censor people.
And also at the same time, they've spawned a generation of men who feel very entitled to debate women and other people and are constantly asking for debates. So oddly enough.
I don't think
debate is the best.
Well, although again, like they can't even win the debates where they do have. It's fascinating, like what you were mentioning, like, you know, the one person who Ben Shapiro has been begging to debate is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. Like, he will not debate. He doesn't want to debate anyone else. I'm sorry. He does like debating freshman college students.
Yeah.
Because like that is effectively the intellectual caliber of their arguments. Like they just don't know what they're talking about. And so yesterday, for instance, on Twitter, I did a thread looking at how this guy who writes at the Federalist and elsewhere, he was trying to say that Republicans are not overrepresented among people who don't want to get vaccinated. And except his polling was like 4 months out of date. And then I told him about it and he never took it down. He never corrected it.
Because that's not the point. Like, that's not what the point is.
What is the point?
The point of putting that out there is to make whatever point he wants to make. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. It just matters that he, you know, is making the point he wants to make and can point to something that, you know, seems like it's relatively true, because no one who reads him is going to, you know, go and say, hey, this isn't true. Pure solidarity, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, so in the years that you've been covering the garbage men on the internet, how have things changed for this group, would you say, since you first started paying attention to them?
Well, I'd say like after Elliot Rodger, there was a huge, huge, huge spike in the amount, in the number of message boards, and the amount they were like reeling people in, and not just incels, but like MGTOWs, men going their own way, red pillars, all of these various groups were, you know, attracting a lot of attention ever since then.
Would you mind explaining what these groups are? Because, you know, not everybody is as what is a MGTOW? Yeah.
Okay. So you've got your incels, your involuntary celibates who are not having sex, but would prefer to be having sex and feel entitled to sex from women. And then you have men going their own way.
But only good looking women.
Exclusively.
Yeah.
They are extremely harsh about how women look, like more so. And they're also extremely harsh about how they look. Like they're talking about, like, you know, 2 inches of bone is on their face is the, or sorry, 2 millimeters of bone is the difference between Chad, who's the, you know, their ideal Chad and incel, you know, Chad is like the ideal man. And so you've got,
so you got the incels.
Specific. Then the MGTOWs are men going their own way, and they're men who have decided they are done with women, period. Like,
but they're not going to be gay.
No, they're not going to be gay. They have decided that women only want men in order to, you know, support them, and they want to like marry them, take all of their money, and then leave. So that's a big thing for them. And so they talk a lot about like how they're, you know, learning to live on their own, and they make their own meals, and they're really sad looking because none of them can cook. And they just basically think that women are evil and they want nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time those guys are divorced and they're like, oh, we know the reality about how women are evil. And the red pillars are, you know, it's the Matrix thing where, you know, the red people, the red pill people know the truth. The blue pill people are, you know, content living, they're content living a lie. And the real truth the red pillars know are is that it's actually men who are oppressed rather than women.
Mm-hmm. And how do they say that? Who's oppressing them?
Women. So their whole theory is that, like, you know, all of these, you know, women say that they're oppressed and everything, but, you know, actually, you know, men, you know, I don't, who even knows at this point, but there's a lot of different theories as to why, you know, oh, women get, you know, can do whatever they want if they look a certain way, but men can't. It's generally kind of shallow crap like that. They're also obsessed with, you know, false rape accusations and other things like that.
Mm-hmm. They do seem to be, and and then I guess you've maybe got kind of your fourth group, which is your white nationalists.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's the, I think you could argue that a lot of what we see today in far right neo-Nazi type politics, it originated from this.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but can you tell us about the history of how that worked, and like Gamergate and some of that?
Well, a lot of the main people, you know, in the alt-right, alt-light, literally came from the manosphere.
What is the manosphere?
Manosphere is like the various factions of, you know, anti-feminist men on the internet. And, you know, men's rights activists and what have you. So like Cernovich was an MRA.
Men's rights.
For a long time, this guy, Roosh, was trying to join, who was like a big pickup artist guy. He was trying to join the alt-right, but because he's not a white person, was roundly rejected. And also because of the fact that he pushed the whole pickup artistry, sleep with as many women as possible thing. Mm-hmm. Which they were not into. They were like, no, women need to be virginal and pure. And you're, you know, polluting all the women by having sex with them. Or raping them, because he was a pretty big fan of, you know, explaining to men how to rape women or date rape women. So in various countries. But so he ended up trying to, you know, be like, oh, I've converted. I'm, you know, totally anti-sex now. I'm going to, you know, marry a nice Christian.
And I'm a Christian. Girl. Yeah. I'm a fundamentalist Christian, just like you guys. Okay. Well, so
accepted him.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, okay. So then what was Gamergate?
Oh my gosh. So it's really hard to do that in a concise way.
Sorry.
So many years ago, there was already a lot of tension in the gaming community because, you know, men felt that, you know, women were having an outsized influence on a thing that, you know, they liked. They were mad at Anita Sarkeesian for
who
writing
was, about who was who?
Oh, she was just a critic of misogyny and sexism in video games.
Okay.
And so she did all these, you know, videos, you know, talking about the ways in which video games were super sexist. And the men were really upset about that. And they were also very upset about new games that they felt were influenced by like social justice and feminism rather than just like, you know, blowing people up and killing hookers. So I am dying for a glass of water.
Yeah. So basically there was this, and these were people who primarily were not that political, but they became very enraged at, you know, what they saw was an intrusion of women into a male space. And so they basically decided to team up and expose her and expose how it was all just a big lie and that no one wanted to hear what she had to say. And, you know, anyway, they came up with some stuff and it was honestly not very good from a reporting standpoint. But, you know, then they kept trying to force people to talk about it in the mainstream media. And, you know, they actually had some success. But as they were, you know, getting together and engaging in activism, they collided, you know, not collided, they sort of discovered 4chan and the 4chan neo-Nazi board of Paul, P-O-L. And the people from Paul started getting interested in this too, and they basically made a lot of converts. And Paul itself had kind of originally started off as more libertarian, Ron Paul type people, and they got basically, because the thing that a lot of people don't understand about right-wing intellectualism is that it doesn't exist. And so basically, because they have no real ideas, no policies, nothing that they're driving toward accomplishing in terms of serving the public, basically they're just perpetually drifting ever rightward. Like that's the only thing they can do, because the insane people, they have ideas. You know, they want to make divorce illegal. They want to, you know, like some of them literally call themselves advocates of Christian Sharia. Like they call themselves that. And so basically that's where the alt-right came from. And like, that's a story I feel like, Robin, that a lot of people, would you say, do they know that story?
It depends. If you're a person who covers this.
Yeah, they just say the average political journalist.
No, probably not. No. I mean, yeah. I probably the average person doesn't even know all the players in the, you know, regular game as far as this goes, you know, as far as the whole like alt-right goes, if that's what they're even calling themselves anymore.
Yeah, well,
they come up with new names constantly, so
they do. And the thing that, you know, is like it's really kind of disturbing in terms of mainstream journalists that they drop the ball on covering the, you know, the boomer Christian right. They never told the public who these people were and what they were up to and what they wanted and what they were doing. And then their children basically went and launched the alt-right and, you know, all these other splinter movements and whatever they're calling themselves nowadays. And they still don't talk about it really much at all, other than, you know, like if every once in a while, like in the case of Elliot Rodger, you know, like you'll see some people be like, oh, holy shit, this thing happened here. Let's talk about them for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then let's move on to, oh my God, did you see what Trump said on Twitter?
I do think it, you know, certainly became a thing after January 6th, because so many people with that kind of ideology were the people who were getting arrested after it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like there were a lot of Proud Boys. There was Baked Alaska, who was like, you know, notorious troll, was one of the people who was there. And so, you know, I think that when that, whenever something big like that happens, there's like, you know, a little bit of interest from the mainstream media, for a little bit, but like, honestly, keeping up with this stuff is like not the most pleasant of the, of activities.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of different characters.
Yeah.
And you have to keep
like
them
a soap opera and not a very interesting.
Yeah, a really shitty one.
Yeah.
And the thing also that I think also is off-putting to them is that none of these people is, are elected to elective office.
No.
And so the mainstream press is very, very, you know, Congress or president focused, and almost to the exclusion of everything else and anyone else, no matter what they're doing. I mean, like in the case of...
That's partially why, you know, 4 years ago, they missed the beat on Trump. Like, they were like, who would even like this guy? And that is one thing that I was like, no, there are all these people who are who like him and will absolutely vote for him because he said he was going to grab him by the pussy. Like, that is what they are into, and he's going to win. And people were like, oh, no, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, but even now I would say that a lot of people don't understand that. And I think this is, you know, pretty common among more centrist Democrats and probably even like some of the more socialist oriented people who basically spend their time attacking Nancy Pelosi. Like that's all they do. But like for them, they're like, oh, whatever, you know, Fox News is dumb. Like everybody knows it. And it's like, no, they don't. And to some degree, I actually kind of blame Jon Stewart for that, I would say. Because Jon Stewart, like, he was correct that these people were stupid and didn't have any ideas, but he just, you know, made people think of them as a big joke. What do you think of that thesis, Robin Panakia?
I would say that that's true to a degree. I think he did a good job in certain ways as far as like even letting people know that some of those people existed, which was, it's very easy to sort of get into your own bubble and like have no idea these people even exist or are saying crazy things. But at the same time, I don't think he ever really took them too seriously. And they kind of like, they shouldn't be taken seriously in terms of their ideas being considered as like, you know, reasonable ideas in the marketplace of ideas, but you know, they should be taken seriously in the way that like they are an actual danger to people. Like, I mean,
yeah, well, and honestly, like, I think you can see that happening again with the rise of these, you know, junk right-wing sites like Daily Wire and some all these other ones, like, you know, the mainstream press or like Newsmax or OAN, like they think that these media companies don't matter because they're so ridiculous and they interview people who don't know what they're talking about. And their stories are, you know, they never do any reporting. They just whine and complain about other people's stuff. And so they think that because they're so obviously ridiculous that they don't matter. But NPR just this week.
The Ben Shapiro, you know, thing.
Yeah, came out with a study that showed that Daily Wire and other things owned by the company that owns them, which is not owned by Ben Shapiro, it's actually owned by these two Christian nationalists. Like, they are absolutely freaky people. They're referred to as the Wilkes brothers.
Yeah.
And one of them literally is he retired as the pastor, but he was for the longest time the pastor of this cult in rural Texas that basically said that, you know, Christians are the real Jews, and we're the children of God, and we're going to take over America and impose, well, basically Handmaid's Tale type stuff. Like, that's who is funding Ben Shapiro. And then at the same time, Ben Shapiro also has no problem, you know, getting in bed with white nationalists also. He's repeatedly talked about how, and now he claims he doesn't believe this, but like he wanted to, you know, commit, he wanted to have ethnic cleansing in Israel and get rid of all Palestinians out of Israel. And a lot of people don't know this about Ben Shapiro, but he even went on a alt-right podcast in 2014 and literally talked about secular and atheist Jews and said that they're trying to destroy America. They have a war on Christianity and a war on white males, and they're so terrible. And they don't even believe in, they don't care about being Jews. So basically, fuck them. You guys can do what you want to them. And like the New York Times and all these other publications continue to talk to him as if he's some sort of credible source. But after doing all these things, like, it's outrageous.
Because he's, you know, he's put together. He is, in his own way, well-spoken. And so sometimes when that happens, the blinders go up and they're like, oh, he's respectable. Therefore, we should treat him as such. I think one of the big problems is that you have a lot of people who really do believe that if you ignore something, it goes away. Like, you know, when you're a kid and you get bullied and they're the teachers who are like, your problem is that you're not ignoring these people well enough. And I think that there are a lot of people who believe that, you know, the more these people are only doing this for attention. And the more attention you give them, the worse they'll get. However, that is generally not actually the case, because usually what ends up happening is that, you know, a lot of attention gets put on them, and then they end up getting kicked off of whatever platform they were on. So they then have much less influence.
Yeah, well, and the other thing also is that they don't understand that they actually believe the things that they say.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they think that it's just about trolling, you know, owning the libs. But no, they actually do want to make divorce illegal. They do want to make birth control illegal, not just abortion, birth control. Yeah. And like they want these things, and like to pretend that, you know, and like I think, you know, in 2016, the media obsessions over Richard Spencer, the alt-right racist activist, I mean, it was just a disgrace. I remember reading a profile, and this was in Mother Jones, actually, a progressive.
Oh, publication. I remember that. Yeah.
The lead of the story was Richard Spencer is eating
dapper
flecks of tuna with chopsticks, yeah. And he's so dapper. And it's like, wow, do you not remember what the media did with David Duke when he came on the scene? Oh, it's literally the same act, and they just go for it, and they fall for it.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the thing. Studies have shown over and over and over again that when someone is nice looking and well put together, people are insanely forgiving of almost any terrible thing they want to do. This happens with crime. This happens with, like, you know, Nazis. If you hear, you know, it's a lot easier to demonize someone if they, you know, seem like a schlub. Then if they look like Richard Spencer and they've got, you know, nice bone structure and, you know, neat little haircut there. There's a desire. And I think a lot of people, especially, you know, the MSNBC kind of people, like those pundits and everything, to just have a very hard time believing that someone who looks a certain way is actually bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the flip side also is that they have a tendency to think that people who are uneducated or poor, that they can't accomplish anything by banding together. And when you look at what because a lot of these far right activists, you know, they're unemployable. No one wants to hire them, so they live off of welfare, literally. A lot of them. And of course, they never mention that. But and a lot of them do kind of, you know, look bedraggled and whatever. And there's this tendency, they're no threat. They're just a bunch of deliverance wackos. That's all.
And they're tacky. There's a terror. America has an absolute terror of tackiness. And if you're, you know, classy, if you know which salad fork to use, people are a little bit more forgiving. You look like a schlub. You look, you know, like most of these people do. they're going to, you know, treat you like that and also think that you have no influence on anyone else because who would ever listen to those people?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and at the same time, though, I do think just going back to the Brandy Love episode that we just saw, you know, so she's, you know, she's non-religious, as she has said, and she said that she was raised as a Republican. And so, you know, for me, as somebody who came out of a non-religious Republican background after I left Mormonism, now I was non-religious and Republican. And, you know, I for the longest time, I had this idea that they were a lot more tolerant or rational, that the people that I was with, that's what they, you know, that they were like me. I projected my own image onto them. Because, you know, as I supported same-sex marriage and, you know, I supported abortion rights and, like, I was okay with those things. And, you know, and I had this idea that a lot of people who were on the political right agreed with me. And so when I saw this happen to Brandy Love, you know, she basically was reliving what happened to me.
Oh, interesting.
In so many ways. So I really felt sorry for her. And she still doesn't get it, though, I think.
No. Well, because I mean, there's a little bit of a battle going on, I think, between like the 4chan Republicans and the usual suspects right now. Like there are these people who really thought that the Republican Party is for freedom. They would never legislate morality. And that was one of the things that she retweeted that, you know, someone had said. And they're like, you can't be a Republican if you want to legislate morality, which is literally all Republicans want to do. They're the only ones legislating morality. They are completely alone in that. You know, they're the ones who want to, you know, ban same-sex marriage. They're the ones who want to ban abortion. Of course they want to legislate morality. But these people have sort of taken this idea that, oh, the Republican Party wants us to have guns. They want us to be able to be racist without any consequences.
And they want, and they want to get rid of taxes.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the new ones don't even really care about the taxes thing. I really don't. I think a lot of them, oddly enough, from what I've read, are almost starting to veer to the left economically. You know, the whole like Ayn Rand thing has sort of seen its day. And I've seen people, oddly enough, on the Donald, that subreddit that is no longer a subreddit, say that they were in favor of a UBI. They have no idea what the Republican Party stands for at all.
All they know
is that they want to be able to say racist things on social media and have no consequences. And, you know, and carry guns.
And to be sexist.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it is really illustrative of the intellectual collapse of the American right, because like they, you know, it was constructed as a Christian nationalist movement. Like William F. Buckley, the creator of National Review, his first book was called God and Man at Yale, and that point of that book was to get them to fire professors.
Which they're still trying to do.
To fire professors who didn't believe in the resurrection or Jesus's divinity. Like that was the point of what they were doing, to stop atheist, godless communism. That was how they started, and now they've devolved to, well, we just want to be able to be a dickhead on the internet.
Yeah, really, it's like, you know, the cruelty is the point. They just want to be terrible people without anyone being, saying, you're an asshole. Like, that is the main goal for almost everything. And, you know, they have various ways at which they want to be terrible human beings without any consequences. But that's really the only thing that unites them right now.
Well, and that's here's the thing, though, you know, when I was a conservative activist and, you know, somebody would have said something like that, you know, I would have been offended at that remark because I was projecting my own perspectives onto my co, you know, my co conservatives. And I really had no idea what they thought. Huh?
Which is kind of what they're all doing. They're sort of choose your own adventuring it and mm-hmm. then assuming that everyone agrees with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so can you think of any other examples, recent ones, where, you know, these garbage men on the internet have had some interesting episodes besides this Brandy Love thing?
Well, fairly recently, the National Review, I was looking for it because I thought you wanted me to send it to you.
I'm saying you can talk about it.
Basically, it was, you know, along with their whole, like, you know, political discrimination as a civil rights struggle. Their whole idea that, oh, you shouldn't be able to fire people for saying racist shit on the internet or sexist shit on the internet. Mm-hmm. The main weight of their argument was that, oh, women don't want to sleep with Trump supporters and mm-hmm. that's bad. And, you know, they have too much power. And what that now means is that when Trump supporters try and go get jobs, these women who don't want to sleep with them are not going to hire them. And now it's going to be like their big civil rights struggle. And a lot of the anger from the men's groups is, oh, women won't sleep with us. That's the big problem. There was also in the Federalist recently an article about how we should not have subsidized childcare, not because of any kind of, you know, oh, it's expensive, we don't want to pay for that reason, but specifically because they want women to stay home and raise babies. And mm-hmm. that if you make childcare available, they might not do that and they might not choose to do that. So,
yeah, well, yeah, no, and actually your, the National Review piece, yeah, it was interesting because, you know, it's yet another example of how, you know, everything they do is in bad faith, that they're not concerned, for instance, that on dating websites, Black women are least likely to get responses from people, and Asian men are least likely to get responses from people. Like, that doesn't concern them at all. And it's only about their own, you know, dominant group. But then specifically that they're trying to privilege their own speech. Everything they do is about that, because again, like, they don't want to talk to Brandy Love to hear what she has to say. They don't want to talk to, you know, they run away from Sam Cedar. Like, they won't debate anyone. But they do want their own beliefs to be privileged. It seems mm-hmm. like.
And at the same time, they don't want to get rid of at-will employment. Like, which would actually solve their problem, but they know it's not a real problem.
Yeah, well, but
just cause firings would absolutely solve the problem that they claim is a big problem, where they're going to be just kicked off mm-hmm. of their, you know, fired from their jobs for loving Donald Trump too much.
Yeah,
and you know, there is a solution to that, but they don't actually care about it because it might actually help someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's, you know, you were talking about how some of these newer conservatives have beliefs that are, you know, maybe left of center on the economic front, but they're just running into a buzzsaw because the elected Republicans will never do any of that stuff. And like even the ones like Josh Hawley, who pretends to, you know, have some mm-hmm. Make some overtures toward economic progressives. Like, it's all fake. Like, he voted for the Trump tax cut. The Trump tax cut literally raises taxes on the bottom quintiles of taxpayers over in the long run. It raises their taxes.
Yeah.
It's not a tax bill that protects lower income people. It does nothing of the sort. And Josh Hawley loved it.
Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't care. All they care about is, like, do I get to be a shitty person? What do I have to do in order to achieve this goal that I have? Like, mm-hmm. that's kind of it.
Yeah. Well, now, do you think, what can our listeners and your readers, my readers, like, do you think that they should be, what can they do to help the mainstream media understand some of this better? What would you say if people wanted to help with that?
I think just asking people more direct questions would help, honestly, instead of coddling everyone and acting as if they don't actually have nefarious intentions at all. I think assuming that, you know, they're always, you know, these actually good on some level, it ends up hurting, you know, the amount these things can be discussed. I also think that, you know, actually saying what the Republican Party believes in as often as possible would be very helpful.
I mean, some of that is the fault of Democrats too, though they don't talk about very much at all. And it's baffling.
Well, because a lot of Democrats want Republicans to vote for them. So there's like this sort of bind where they can't insult them because they want their votes.
Yeah. I think also that one of the problems we have in our politics is that after the conservatives took over the Republican Party, a lot of people who were moderate Republicans just drifted over to the Democrats. And so the Democratic Party has a lot of people in it who actually are Republicans. Like, that's their mindset. And they agree with a lot of this stuff, like on tax cuts and things like that, or regulations. And so for them to go off and say that these ideas are, they would never go off and say these ideas are wrong.
Because, well, also a lot of
they agree.
Power are, and they have money and they actually want to hold on to their money. So,
Well, and so I would say, you know, something that people can do is, you know, well, one immediate thing is that, you know, both your site, Wonkett, and my site, Discover Flux, or Flux on the internet, we have a Patreon. You can visit patreon.com/discoverflux to help us get the word out. And Wonkett, also, you guys are reader supported. I thought that was an interesting development. Was that a decision that you got, that you personally were involved with? You guys had ads for a long time.
Yeah, we didn't have ads for a long time.
Then you got rid of them.
Yeah, that was all Rebecca.
Okay. Well, I'll have to talk to her about that, because I think that that is, you know, people need to stop giving money to the corporate mainstream media. Like, they've failed at their jobs. They don't know what they're doing. Don't pay for subscriptions to them. Like, cancel your cable TV, because you're subsidizing Fox News even when you do that. Like, even if you never watch Fox News, they take a cut out of your subscriber fee every month.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the cable company or internet companies charge you more if you just want to get internet.
They do, but you still do come out ahead though. With not having both servers. They do raise your internet price, but your overall combined price is lower still. And I mean, like, another thing that people should be doing, I think, is, you know, so cable companies in other countries are not allowed to have bundles, that's what they call them, packages, where you're forced to buy one, the channels that you know, you're paying for channels that you don't want. In other countries, they don't have that. A lot of other countries, you can just say, okay, I want these five channels, and this is what you get. Like, that should be how things are in this country, because I think tens of millions of people would not want to pay for Rupert Murdoch's welfare check. Because he doesn't need it.
No, I would probably just get the ID channel, but.
All right. Well, so we're coming to the end here. So I will put up on the screen. So Robin Pinocchio is on Twitter. She's at Robin Elise. That's RobynElyse. And do you have any other social media profiles that you want to tell people about, Robin?
No. It's the only way I can manage. I mean, I'm on Facebook, but I don't really mess with that. I can do one social media profile at a time.
Okay. Well, there we go. You are one of the many fun writers at Wonkett. theoryofchange.com. So I hope people can check that out as well. So thanks for joining me today, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to just remind people that Theory of Change is part of a network that I have launched called Flux, and it's flux.community is the address. So be sure to check that out. And then, of course, you can also follow Theory of Change. It's theoryofchange.show and on Twitter at Theory Change. I'm Matthew Sheffield, and I appreciate everybody joining us today.